Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2864. That's 2864. I'm Carol Levine. I'm Vice President of NASCA. And sorry for the delay, but things happen. Okay. But we are here. Yes, we are. So tonight, I guess our guest couldn't make it. That's okay. We have Annie, and she's going to be here. She's from California. And we have Bill, he's going to be here, and it's going to be myself, okay. So I'm going to read the mission statement, and we'll go from there. And I have a topic here. I always have all kinds of topics to talk about. So the topic is going to be, and it's very important, especially during these days that we're living in, okay, 10 reasons parents don't discuss child sexual abuse with their children. And that's a no-no. Okay, so let's get back to the mission statement, and then we will start the show. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to people, getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone, and we know this. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, you hear me always emphasizing prevention. Well, tonight's topic is going to give you a good reason why, okay? Prevention. And I do believe that there's a lot of things that parents can do in the proper homes, as I like to call them, where there isn't all of that anguish and stress and maybe sexual abuse and beatings and the physical and the mental and emotional abuse that we all know about here at NASCA and in neglect going on. They can sit down with their children. Now, on our website, that's www.NASCA.org, that's NASCA.org, we do offer a tremendous amount of information about child abuse. And if you open up at any time, any given time, the articles, the links that we have provided for you, and that's in the red blocks, you'll see all different kinds of things you can click into. It speaks about prevention, how to speak to your children, what to say, what not to say, when is the proper time to start speaking to them. And for God's sake, people, you know, when you do speak to your children, you know, don't act funny about the private parts, okay? Because, quite frankly, we don't live in a world where it's private anymore. It hasn't been forever, okay? It's never been private. Once a child is violated, it's not private, is it? We live in a dangerous world, and our children should know and be able to tell what parts were touched. It's not called a cookie. It's not called a wiener. It's not called any of the cutesy little names that parents and other people, society, give it. It is what it is. And there's also directions, if you will, and all kinds of things, ways, role-playing that parents can use. That, I believe, is under David Pittman. He has a couple of really good articles in there. And he suggests, I think this is very good, I've used it in presentations, that you do role-playing before you start speaking to your children. And that way there's no giggling going on or silly names coming out, okay? And that's very important because, God forbid, if your child is abused, you don't want to say that they touched my cookie or my wiener. I know I have a lot of humor, but this isn't a humorous subject. It's something that has to be addressed. Okay, so I have before me an article that I've used maybe two or three times on the show, and I got it actually in school, but it doesn't matter when I got it. It applies to now. And it's called 10 Reasons Parents Don't Discuss Child Sexual Abuse. Many times I've had people say to me, I want my child to remain innocent for as long as possible. I want them to be a child. Well, there's two things wrong with that. Number one, we don't live in an innocent world. And number two, children should be taught certain things so that they can be safer. Okay? So that they can be safer. If you talk to your children about child abuse of all different kinds and in the proper way, age appropriate, and this is all explained to you on our website, how to do that, you have a bonding with your child because to teach them how to walk across the street is one thing. To teach them not to take candy from a stranger is another thing, and it's important. But the other things, the good, the bad, and the ugly, which is what I use many times, the good, the bad, and the ugly, if we teach our children about that, then they know when an adult or an older sibling or an older kid down the block is acting in an inappropriate way. And if you have that proper bonding with your child, you tell your child you will always believe them. You tell them you are there for them. They will feel comfortable to come to you and say, this is what happened. Okay. Now, again, this is called 10 Reasons Parents Don't Discuss Child Sexual Abuse. And this is actually written by a prosecutor in New York. And for the past 16 years, she was a prevention specialist. I have heard all the reasons why parents don't discuss child sexual abuse, she says, and prevention with their children. I have heard them so often that I can recite them by heart. In honor of April, and April, of course, is coming up, and in honor of April's Child Abuse Prevention Month, I decided, as she's saying, it would be a good idea to speak about the 10 reasons why parents choose not to discuss the subject. Now, I have two people here, and the number here, by the way, is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And if you want to call in and be a part of this discussion, please feel free. If you want to sit and listen, then you'll learn something, and that's good too. Now, with everything that's going on in our world, it's even more important to speak to our children because, quite frankly, everyone, all the things that we speak about on NASCA, all the abuses have skyrocketed. And that goes for kidnapping, that goes for trafficking, and everything else, physical, mental, emotional, sexual, and neglect abuses. So parents have to do a better job at being a parent. And they have to become educated. And once they're educated, then they can educate their children. And then just maybe we'll be able to put a little dent in the statistics of child abuse. Okay, here's number one, and I'm going to, you know, have my people on here. I have Annie, like I said, and Bill, who is the founder of NASCA. I'm going to go back and forth with them. And, again, please do listen to this. All right, number one, and feel free to call in and discuss this also. Number one, children are seldom victims of sexual abuse. Well, of course, we know that's false. Actually, according to the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC in the United States, 1 in 4 and 1 in 6 boys are sexually abused by the time they're 18. We know now that it's closer to 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 4 boys because of everything that's happening in our country is sexually abused by the time they are 18. Consider those numbers for a moment. They are shocking and they are devastating. Those figures alone should motivate parents to seek out prevention strategies. What do you guys think about that? I think that's a good advice right there. What do you think, Annie? Let me open up her mic. That would be smart.
Hi. I'm sorry. I had to unmute.
That's all right. All right.
Hi, girl.
Okay. Hi. Well, you heard that. Yes.
I did. I think it's really important that parents are open and honest with kids and talk about their private parts, as you say, with their real names. I wanted to share that I was from a family that didn't talk about any of that. Sexual abuse was rampant in that family, but nobody told me I was going to have a period. That was a complete shock to me. I didn't know anything about it. Nobody had said anything. And then when it came time to say anything, my mother, you know, I said, Mom, this is happening. She just grabbed some, you know, products and gave them to me and didn't say a word. Like, how to use them? Nothing. And that's part of the reason I think that I got pregnant at 18 was the not talking about it.
I go along with that. See, that's where parents are, they have to get out of that mode of thinking, you know, because as long as they don't, kids learn about sex and all this other stuff on the playgrounds, you know, in the schoolyards, wherever you're learning, wherever you're living, and you don't learn properly. And then children do, you know, they do get pregnant. At one time, we had an organization come on. God's sake, I'm going to look and see if I can find them. And it spoke about teenage pregnancy. And a lot of the kids thought, you know, when they got pregnant, that they wanted to keep the child. Now, listen, I'm not for abortion, believe me. Oh, no, no, no. That's my particular feeling, okay? But they had a class they would send, you know, girls to, and I think it was a very good idea. They'd give them a 5-pound bag of potatoes, all right? And they'd had to carry around that 5-pound bag of potatoes so they could see how much a baby would weigh. And then they had screaming dolls, I think it was, and wow, well, I'm sorry, if your baby's crying, you have to attend to them. Things like that. Well, they had a whole bunch of things like that in this class, getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and feeding baby, right? And all of these things, by the time the girls had finished that class, they didn't want to get pregnant at the age of 14, 15, 16, 17, or even 18. So I think we could use something like that again. Because, you know, children, they don't realize what it's like to be a parent, to be a mother, and how it slows down their life. They can't go out and hang out with their friends, can they? They can't do this. They can't do that. So I think that parents need to teach their children, certainly, you know, about the body and what the period is in plain English and, you know, and speak to them about sex and also to how it affects your life at a very early age. And, yeah, I agree with you, and I think that was awful. But what do you think about that? And do you remember that group? Let me undo his mic here. Hold on. There you go. It's stolen around. There you go.
I don't I don't remember the group's name, but I do remember having this session. That was quite some time ago. But the thing I wanted to say, was, I really appreciate and enjoy this topic every time we have it. And, anything to do with prevention. And I wish that, I think the more interesting part would be if people would call in and, ask us questions about, or just present topics that they want explained or whatever. And we would be able to, delve into some areas that we normally don't. Because our presentation often is kind of repetitive from the last time we talked about it. But what shakes it up is when somebody calls in and says, when is the right time to tell a girl that she's going to have breasts or whatever, whatever the issue is or the question is, it's very helpful to move the discussion along. And I was one of those people who you just explained, learned about anything sexual on the playground. My parents did not bother to tell me anything about sexuality at all, including body part names. So I grew up not knowing what they were, and I actually learned them on the playground. My mother and father never discussed anything with me, at home or anything. So. And sex education back then was drawing on a blackboard with chalk, kind of a diagram of a vagina. Not a vagina,
yeah.
The ovaries and the fallopian tubes.
Yep.
I remember that.
Oh, my God, I remember. Yeah, that was a long time ago. But,
It looks like the antennas on the the one that's like a bug, the thing you put together, it looks like a bug.
Potato.
The ears on that thing look like the fallopian tubes and the ovaries.
Yeah, I remember that. That was strange, wasn't it? Oh my God!
Yeah,
that I lived
in
Staten Island when they started showing that stuff. I remember now. Yeah, it was already too late for God's sake. That's crazy.
That's right.
And I learned mostly about sex out on the in the playground there, and then of course I was kidnapped and raped. So that was awful. But, the point is this. We need to have parents talking to their kids. And, they haven't gotten much further from back in those days, Bill, as today. Because most parents have that mentality where we want to keep them innocent for as long as we can.
Yeah, but that's a huge mistake. I mean, listen, that's a huge mistake. People need to understand, that when you're talking about the numbers that you just expressed, which is another thing I like to mention a little more often than we do, but if you're talking about, 1 in 4 or 1 in 5, whatever the number is, that's a huge number of kids. And part of the problem is they're not pre-taught. So they get into these situations. I didn't have any idea what it was that was going on. And, I didn't for about a month. I didn't know anything about what was going on, and it was at a camp. So it was almost every day at a camp for a month, and I had to wait until I went home. And the next year, a couple of months later in school, that's where I started learning it, on the playground. It was pretty inappropriate, We are risking the health and the well-being of our children if we don't talk about prevention. And one of the things that we have to talk about with prevention is the part of the telling of the story that involves explaining to children about being sexually abused, what that means. We don't talk about that enough either, so they don't know how to recognize it because they don't know what it is. But if
right.
if you talk to your son or daughter about, not allowing people to see or touch or talk about their body because they're children and the other people are not, they're older. And you have to be right up front with this, I think. But,
absolutely.
That's how I feel. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more with that. And the fact that they're kids are not learning things right. They're not learning it properly. And, that's, again, I consider that like a disservice to them because then they find out the wrong way. Annie had mentioned it. You mentioned it. I mentioned it. We know this. But now people have to learn it. They have to understand that this isn't something that you just skirt over. You have to teach your children. It's another way of teaching safety, for God's sake. And, I mean, like, get over it. That you can say, get over, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go down to number two. This kind of thing doesn't happen where we live. Actually, child sexual abuse has no socioeconomic boundaries. It doesn't care if you are black or white, rich or poor, or what religion you practice. It can creep in when you least expect it. Boy, is that ever the truth. I was a wealthy girl. Well, I wasn't. They were. They didn't show me any of their wealth. But the point is, it didn't matter whether you were poor. It doesn't matter whether you're wealthy. It doesn't matter if you're middle class. I think back then there was a middle class. There isn't any more today, I don't think. I don't know. I don't think so. But it doesn't matter. Those things just don't matter. Because you know what? Pedophiles go where children go. And they don't care if you're a wealthy kid or if you're a poor kid or a kid in the middle if it exists. They just want you. You become their prey, and that is prey. Now, they can take their time, They can take their time, Annie, A lot of times they'll go to playgrounds. Oh, how many times we've heard of this. They go to playgrounds, and they'll scope a kid out. And maybe they won't do anything that day. You know what I'm saying? And they go back in a day or two. They see the kid is still there. Maybe mommy takes the kid there at 11 o'clock in the morning. Or maybe they're part of a school program and they go there at 11 o'clock in the morning. But they do scope out their prey, prey. And a lot of times they'll start to mingle around where that child is. And before you know it, they're talking to the child. And, they'll go there, and they take their time. It doesn't have to be a just group, where you see some kid, and you just pick that kid up and take him. Yes, that can happen. I was kidnapped. Bill was kidnapped. But sometimes they take their time, too. They're very cunning, is what I'm trying to say. And they wait for the right moment. So, it doesn't matter whether you're black, whether you're white, whether you're red skin like an American Indian or an Indian, whatever, or what you are. It doesn't matter whether your skin is brown. No one cares. Whether you're Chinese, they don't care. They just scoop you up when they can. So that's number two. And, of course, we all here know this. Number three. We don't let our children go near strangers. Okay, it says here, actually 93% of all child sexual abuse occurs at the hands of someone they've known, someone they trusted, by their parents even. Even if a child is never around strangers, he or she could be victimized by a neighbor. They know the neighbor, okay? A coach. A religious official or a family member. Parents who teach only stranger danger are doing a disservice, there's my word, disservice to their children. What do you have to say about that, Annie?
Well, when I think about whether, you know, everybody says, oh, not in my neighborhood. There's no child abuse in this neighborhood. Well, if there's one out of three girls, that means it's in one out of three homes that there's a victim. I mean, basically, that's a lot of sexual abuse going on. If you think about it, go out on the street and look up and down your block and think about that, that those houses have little girls, little boys being abused. I think about that, and I feel so sad and hopeless, but what we can do is talk about it out loud and publicly, as you guys are doing all the time.
Well, you know, they say, I saw an article once, which I've spoken about on air here, that every fifth house, okay, has some kind of abuse in it, especially in an urban area, especially in urban areas. That way you can count the houses. They're using urban areas when they say that. So it can be, you know, maybe a child's being beaten. It doesn't always have to be sexual abuse, you know, or maybe they're being emotionally abused, or maybe they're being beaten and sexually abused, or maybe they're being neglected. They don't have proper clothing, you know, things, all kinds of things like that. And those abuses are everywhere, okay? And it's a terrible, terrible thing that children have to go through that. And when you speak about, as you're saying, take a walk up and down the block, yeah, you bet. The town that I lived in before I moved here to Oxford, which I think is spooked, I really do. I think there are ghosts around here, okay? I believe that. It's the most quietest town I have ever been in my life. You don't hear a sound. And that's eerie, okay? But that doesn't mean that there isn't some kind of abuse going on in the houses that are somewhat nearby here. Abuse happens in every neighborhood. In the urban areas, it's more because there's more people. So you're going to have more abuse. Now, that's the truth of the matter. What do you think about that, Bill?
I think it's pretty close to true that that there are pedophiles on every street in the country, you know, every neighborhood, certainly. But I think you could bring it down to even smaller than that, not necessarily every block, but every couple blocks. If you want to see the statistics visually, then you go to one of the maps that they have them for all over the country that show you where the registered offenders live. And this is only the registered ones who have been caught and were thought to be serious enough to have to go on the list. So for everyone that's on the list, there's a whole bunch that aren't because they haven't been caught yet or because the crimes that they committed were too small, they're too low level for them to go on the tier two or tier three. They're tier one and they get off the list very quickly. So anyway, the point is that if you look at one of these maps, I guarantee you'll be shocked at how many are in your neighborhood. It doesn't matter where, you know, anybody's talking, where anybody's living and listening to this. They should try it, and they will be really, really surprised. You know, and so this is the point. We don't realize how susceptible children are because we don't even realize how many there are. There are many, many predators out there, many. And, you know, in a sense, they kind of compete for the kids, you know. There are more predators than we know, and the kids are, susceptible to all of them, basically. So anyway.
That is so true. Yeah. It's an awful thing. Well, let me go to number four. Okay. My child is not old enough for this discussion. There you go. we know that that's not true. Actually, the appropriate age to begin the discussion about child sexual abuse prevention is when a child is 3 years old. Now, this is what Jill thought, 3 years old.
I agree.
The con- It could be. Well, you know, think about it. If a kid, you're giving your child, there's a lot more to this, but if you give a child a bath, you're giving your child a bath, they start asking, you know, what is this and what is that? That's just normal
right.
talk. They want to know what their bodies are, okay?
That's correct.
And
yep.
And we have to teach them the proper way. And that's another thing where Pittman's good at, because he wants you to role play anyway. What you do is you say, this is your head, these are your eyes, this is your nose, this is your mouth, these are your shoulders, these are your breasts, especially if it's a little girl, right? But you say it anyway, everybody's always got them. This is your tummy, this is your vagina or your penis, this is your knees, and this is your legs, and these are your toes. Just like that. And
right.
and it's always emphasized that you don't giggle, you know, and say, oh, this is your breast, or this is your vagina. You don't do that, because that sends weird signals to the kid. You don't do that. Well, you know, if you say it all in one tone, then the child just figures, well, this is what God made. You say, this is what God made. And you know, this is one thing, and it's all part of the body. That's all. So that's important. The conversation can start as simply as, did you know that the parts of your body covered by, well, now here, she uses the bathing suit, are private. And, well, that's all right if you're going swimming. I'll look at it that way. Did you know that the parts of your body covered by a bathing suit are private and are for no one else to see or touch? Continue the conversation by explaining to the child that he should let mommy or daddy or a teacher, because when kids are being potty trained and stuff, teachers are going to help out there. If someone touches him or her or on those private parts, you know, it's not right, anything other than those three people, say, or a doctor. I think a doctor should be added in there also, because children do go to doctors. What if they have a diaper rash or something? Be sure to include any necessary exceptions for potting training. There we go. Yes. Hygiene and doctor's visits. All right. It's right in here. So you have to explain to your children that that those parts are the vagina or the penis or the breasts are not to be touched by anyone except for, you know, a reason. And if someone outside of the people that I just spoke about, the doctor, right, the nurse, mommy or daddy, or a babysitter, I suppose, could be included in that. What if mommy and daddy go out, Bill? You know, and the kid needs changing.
No, it can be. They can be. I remember having to do that myself. I was substituting for my sister on a job that she'd been asked to do, and she was busy or something. She had double booked or something. Anyway, sometimes when that happened, she would ask me to sit in on her job, and, you know, so she didn't disappoint our neighbors. And one time I do remember that I had to go to somebody's house, and I had to give the little boy a bath. You know, I was like, okay. So it does happen. You know, it does happen. And
yeah,
it was a little kid, but you know, he didn't think anything of it. I didn't think anything of it. So well, I didn't make it a big deal, but I always remembered it afterwards. You know?
So. Well, first of all, you're a guy, all right, and second
yeah.
of all. You know, and it probably was a little bit different for you, you know, giving a child a bath. But I see
yeah.
what you're saying. Yeah.
That was more
but
like
Annie,
that was more like what my that was more like what my sister would have done, you know. While I was like
right.
while I was cutting the grass or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. Well, Annie, yeah. you realize that you understand that's you have any comment about that?
Well, I remember having to bathe with my brothers. I remember that, and my father. So, I mean, I guess they were saying, oh, you know, the older ones will teach the younger ones, but there was abuse. So, I don't know. I still can't shower without fear, even though I'm
really?
In my 60s. But yeah,
you.
The whole bathroom topic is really scary for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, maybe we
too.
Should talk about it then. We should
mm-hmm.
talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
you know
that's
what?
Exactly what we ought to do. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I found a solution, and I've shared it with people. It's that using a see-through shower curtain, not see-through,
yeah.
see-through, but, you know, the light comes through the see-through, that is
yeah.
makes me less afraid because I can see out into the room. And that, I didn't discover that until last year. So I hope everyone who has fear in the bathroom can try that.
Well, that's,
so you're
that's
saying,
the case.
You're saying the translucent shower curtain is better for you?
Yes, to be able to see the room,
okay.
see the door.
Oh, because you can see the rest of the room through it. I see. Okay.
That's why.
So what is your fear? That somebody's going to walk in the room, that kind of thing? Or,
no, not really. I'm not really afraid. It's, what is it? You know, it's just leftover crap. It's
yeah.
Not, yeah, I'm not really afraid. I know I'm not really afraid, and I know nobody's going to come in, and yet there's this hesitancy to get in the shower.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's
yeah.
because
okay.
of what happened
triggered.
Before. Yeah, it's because
yeah.
of what happened before, Bill, you know. I mean, look, I like with the birds. Remember the movie The Birds?
mm-hmm.
Was it The Birds? Yeah, with that psycho who killed his mother and he was talking to her and she was up in the upstairs part of the house. Was that The Birds? Yeah, I think. Was that
no.
The Birds?
No, it was.
No.
No, it was Psycho.
That was Psycho. Thank you. I thought that didn't. What did The Birds have to do with the mother, right? okay, it was Psycho. Yes. To this day, when I walk into the bathroom, and if the shower curtain is pulled tight, you know, I mean, up against the wall the way it's supposed to be pulled across, I get nervous. I will pull the shower curtain open to make sure nobody's there. So, you see, I have
mm-hmm.
a little bit of what Annie's talking about because, you see, when I was living in the pedophile house, he would order me to go into the bathroom, you know, to clean myself off, okay? And at times he'd pop his head in. And that does something to a kid. That does something to your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was between the ages of 6 and 7 and a half. So I even to this day, I pull the curtain when I'm about ready to take a shower because I do that before I go to bed every night. I will pull the curtain open to make sure that there's nothing behind there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I am, too. I get it. I get it. Ooh.
Even
okay.
if you're recovered, you know, you still have those triggers.
Yeah, you do.
They don't go away, some of them.
Sometimes I'll leave the curtain open, but I like the way
mm-hmm.
the bathroom looks better, you know, to have the curtain closed. But then when
mm-hmm.
I do close the curtain, then I'm sorry that I closed it because maybe there might be something behind there, okay? I don't know. Yes, it leaves its marks one way or another when you've been abused.
Yeah.
That's right. There's some things you don't quite get over. Okay,
right.
So we got that one. This one's straightened out. Be sure to include any necessary exceptions for the potty training, hygiene, and doctor's visits. Let's go to number 5. I don't want to scare my child. Oh, good God. Think about how scared the child is when you're going through all the abuse. Okay? When handled properly, children find the message empowering and are not frightened at all. Parents do not refrain from teaching, here we go, traffic safety for fear that their child will be afraid to cross the street. So, too, should we address the subject of body safety. And that is so, so true. I mean, that's exactly what we should do as parents. Absolutely. If we don't, you know, then the kid is going to grow up and not have enough information. and then they're more apt to be, you know, in harm's way.
Yeah.
I think so, too. So no more of this, I don't want to scare my child. Instead, think about how frightened your child's going to be if they're sexually abused.
And the parents people can explain it to the child in a, you know, a calm way, a matter-of-fact way,
mm-hmm.
so that the child's not afraid. You know, they
exactly.
understand, but they're not totally freaked out by it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, that's a definite, you know. We've spoken many times on NASCA, long before you came on, that there's the proper way, and that's with intervention, the proper way that people can speak to their children, the tone of their voice. That's why I mentioned that earlier, too, the tone of your voice. If you're not all excited, well, then the kid's not going to get all excited or scared or anything, you know. And so
yeah.
it's the way that we handle ourselves. There is the right way and the wrong way. In fact, we say that if you're not to interrogate exactly, but if you're trying to, you know, get answers from a child, you remain calm. Otherwise, they'll clam up, and no, they won't tell you anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a definite yes. So
the investigation, which can be feel like an interrogation of a child,
yeah, I know.
Ends up being traumatic of itself, you know. And
absolutely.
I don't want to
yeah.
do that. I still freak out when people are asking me too many questions. You know, I don't like it. They ask me a question, I'll answer it, but then they ask me a second, I'll answer it. Then the third, I say, oh, what are they doing? And then a fourth, and then a fifth. Forget it. It freaks me out.
Yeah.
I don't like to be asked questions. I'll offer what I want to offer, but I don't like to be on the hot seat or, you know, the target of animus or any of that stuff. And I don't think children do either. Like, I
no.
know they don't.
No, and they can tell when they're being interrogated. They stiffen up. I was interrogated, you know, with people in
that's
my
right.
life who abused me, and by the police. And I love the police. People don't like me because I love the police. Sorry, I used to work with them. But you know, the point is, there is a way to question children. And that's something that people need to learn because they will clam up. And then you don't get the information you need, and the kid feels weird. That's what happens. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let's go down to number six.
Well, okay.
Were you done, or was there something else you wanted to say?
No, it's okay. Let's go on.
Okay. Number six. I would know if something happened to my child. Really? I'm laughing at that one. Actually, child sexual abuse is difficult to detect because frequently there are no physical signs of abuse. The emotional and behavioral, okay, the behavioral of a child, those signs may accompany sexual abuse and can cause a variety of triggers. Okay, Annie, what do you have to say about that one?
Can you skip me for a second?
Sure.
Well, I'll take a moment here.
Yeah,
to
take
say
your
that,
place. Go ahead. Yeah.
My experience was my parents never knew. Partly because I was hiding it from them, and partly because they were naive. You know, I think they didn't want to know, in other words. And I didn't want to have the discussion. I didn't want to talk to this. That was an instance where I was certain if I brought it up that I was going to be interrogated. You know, I'd have to go through time after time after time of being questioned, and I didn't want that. So, you know, I kept it from them. And I don't know how much of reluctance they had to bring any of these things up. They never did, though. All the way until I was about 30. well, maybe 27 or something, I think it was. They never knew. And they knew all the people that had molested me, too, which were primarily priests and brothers, but clerics, in two different states, in two different situations. They knew them, but it never occurred to them, and I was terrified to bring it up. So, you know, this is a real, something we really have to bridge. We have to ensure kids that we're not going to interrogate them. In other words, here's what I was going to say about the last topic. You try to engage them in a discussion, kind of a storytelling discussion, rather than, you know, peppering them with questions. Because people are often willing to talk about something instead of being, you know, drilled down on, you know, all aspects of that same thing. So when you're a mom or dad, you just try to invite them to tell you, you know, what went on, not to ask them what went on. Tell you, not ask you. And you'll get better results that way.
But, and then also too, Bill, when they speak about the behavioral signs, okay, at one time I worked at Devereaux Foundation. I did the first shift. I was a supervisor there. And a lot of those kids had been, I worked with the girls, and a lot of those kids had been sexually abused. They have ways of showing it without talking about it. It says here the emotional and behavioral signs, okay, that may accompany sexual abuse can be caused by a variety of triggers. Now, when I've dealt with kids who were sexually abused, you know, at home or not at home, just plain sexually abused, either maybe they'd been a kid that was happy-go-lucky, full of joy, all this other stuff, bouncing around like a normal kid would do. And then all of a sudden, they totally change, and they become quiet and sad. They become like the sad children we speak about, and that's dangerous, all right, when they become sad like that. If they're younger children, say like they're in daycare or something, or maybe even in kindergarten, we've mentioned this before, they may rub up against furniture. Okay, say a little girl will rub up against furniture because she was touched there and stroked there. And what people have to understand, and this is not being, you know, dirty or anything. The act is dirty, what happened to them. But our bodies are made in such a way that we do respond to stimuli, okay? So sometimes people do, you know, have feelings that are good, and they remember it. And children are no different than adults, so they might remember it. Many years ago, Bill, many years ago, even before my time, okay? We're talking about 100 years ago, the nannies, when they were hired, you know, by wealthy, wealthy people, and it was their job to put, you know, kids to sleep. Well,
right.
Some kids got booze, all right, and other kids were actually stroked in their by the vagina or the boys, you know, with their penis. Now they didn't climax or anything, but it calmed them. And then all of a sudden it was found out. And there was a big taboo. Now, this is something you can look back in history. I do a lot of reading, so I happened to come across this once. And it blew my mind. I didn't know who would ever even think about doing such a thing. I wouldn't. My God. So, kids are no, you know, different that way than adults. They might get scared or they might go to sleep. That's just the way it is. So
go ahead, finish this off.
Well, I'm just going to finish this one part of it. The emotional and the behavioral signs. Remember, the kids change when they're being abused. So when they say, actually, child sexual abuse is difficult to detect because frequently there are no physical signs of abuse. Okay, there may not be physical. unless they were abused, you know, in anal, because that would hurt. I mean, that would definitely really hurt. And maybe they walk funny or something. But normally speaking, no, there wouldn't be any signs unless they show signs. And that's other ways of showing, just like I just spoke about. Behavioral changes and maybe inappropriate words the kids wouldn't know unless they were being abused. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of that. That's probably one of the first things. And then also, too, the way they respond, you know, like rubbing, like I said, against furniture or whatever, or just touching them themselves. I mean, that's why I talk about this in daycare centers. Okay. There's a reason for it. And hopefully they do their job, and they should be mandated. They are mandated reporters. So what do you have to say about that? Go ahead, Annie.
Well, I was going to talk on the subject of not knowing that your child mm-hmm. has been abused. And I know that my mom did know, because I have a memory of talking to her, and her response was, no, it's none of my business. Mm-hmm. I was asking her about my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And, none of my business. And then right before she died, she lived to be age 6, she asked me, a few months before her death, she said, did your father ever do anything to you? And do you know, I could not say yes. I could not admit to my mother, she knew, but I couldn't like bring it up as truth between us that this happened. I had to live in the lie with her. I just couldn't talk openly with her about it. I'm sure that would have given her some comfort if I had, but I couldn't do it.
But not always, Annie. It depends on the situation. It depends on the people, the family, the people involved. Like my mother knew about my brother because I told her. See, I always had a big mouth, even when I was a kid. Sometimes it took me a while to use it. Like in the first house that I lived in for a year and a half, I was scared to death of that guy. I feared he'd kill me. He did try. Now, with my brother, I did talk. And what'd she do for me? She just simply said, well, this happens in families, and that was the end of it.
Mm.
Okay? And that went on for years. And that's why I started running away from home. So you see, it's not always, you know, you never know which way it's going to be. Okay, let's put it that way. You don't know how it's going to be. Now, I don't know what would have happened to Bill if he had told, because you see, he's very Catholic. His family was very Catholic. My mother was an atheist. She didn't believe in God. I was the only one that believed in God, and she considered I was weird anyway. And I met Billy Graham when I was 5 years old in New York City, because that side of the family all were born and raised in New York. And he was under convention there, and I was born in New York too. And I met him, and I always had a feeling of God in me. My mother didn't understand me. She was an atheist. Okay, so when she spoke and I told her about my brother, he went through times of believing in God, but most of the time he was an atheist too. That was the way she responded. She said, well, I'll talk to him about it. Well, I don't think she ever did. He never stopped. So you see, you never know which way it's going to go. I mean, you would be a better judge of that than I in your household. But I had a pretty good idea what would happen in my household, and that's why I hit the streets. So you see? Yeah. Now, Bill, if you had told in your household, your family being so Catholic, and you know, in those days, I mean, the priests were like gods. That's the way people looked at them. You know, they were...
I was going to say that the result would have been significant and dramatic and so forth. And then I thought about it and I said, no, it just might be the decision made that we're going to keep this a secret in the family. It could have been that. That might have been the reaction. But I didn't tell my parents, so I won't know. But I want to mention one thing. You used the word dirty when you talked about sex with kids, and I would avoid using that word because I don't. This is me personally. I don't believe that any sex is dirty. I believe it can be criminal. You know, child abuse is criminal. And it can be
you're
immoral.
Right. It's very criminal.
Right?
Good.
It can be immoral, and it can be against anti-religious laws. You know, thou shalt not commit adultery. Right, that's a commandment. But I don't think of it as dirty. And I'll tell you why I wouldn't use that word, especially around kids, because they're going to grow up with the concept that sex is dirty, and you don't want to give them that. You know, sex is a normal, healthy experience in life if it happens in the right way, and it should be fulfilling if it happens in the right way. But it can also be, horrifying if it's done in the wrong way. So I just avoid the terms dirty, because that sets up that they've done something wrong and they haven't. You know, a lot of kids will experience. Their first sex at all will be, mine was, the little girl next door. You know, I was like 5 or 6 or 7, and so was she. And, you know, we took our clothes off for each other, you know, and played doctor and stuff, you know. That was sex, but it wasn't dirty. It's lots of kids do that kind of thing. No.
That's called playing doctor. That's what that is. It's called playing doctor.
That's right, we
used to call it back then, all right, playing doctor. Right. But you're right, right. Yeah. Now, I think I just blurted out with that because to me, any adult or even an older child, a sibling that's 5 years, my brother was 5 years older than me. I don't know if he's alive anymore. But anyway, to me, that would be like a dirty thing to do to a kid. That's what I was thinking. That's why it came out that way. But it's more than that. It's criminal. It's criminal.
Right.
You're right.
All
Absolutely.
Sex with children is criminal. Every sex act with a child is a criminal offense. And that's true all the way down to someone who's, you know, just turning into an adult. And they have even brought some cases for people that were like 16 or something, close to being an adult. But the point is that there is no sex with a kid below 18 that's legal, unless, actually that's not true. There are a couple of states, I think, that they allow you to marry with parents' permission at younger than that. But that's a different situation then, because it's permissible. But for the most part, in the main, you know, having sex with a kid is a criminal act if you're an adult. Period. So.
Period.
Right.
Period.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, right. All right, let's go to number 7. My God, it's already 9:25. Holy Christopher, I'm trying to get through this. Okay. My child would tell me if something happened to him. Okay, we're going to have to go through these fast because it's 9:21, I guess. My clock is fast. But actually, most children do not immediately disclose when they have been sexually abused. Contrary to a child who falls down and runs over to tell his parents, a child who has been sexually abused is likely being told not to tell anyone because no one will believe him, that people will say it is his fault or her fault, that the disclosure will cause great sadness in the family, and that the behavior is their little secret. Wow. That one's loaded. And go ahead, Annie. You start first, and then Bill, and then I'll go into it. Go ahead.
Oh, my. There's a lot to think about.
Yeah.
Well, and it just left my mind. Has that ever happened to you? You're about to say something?
Yeah,
and
I'm a little older than you. It happens.
let's turn it over to Bill. I'm sorry. Bill, would you
That's all right. Don't worry about it. Maybe you might have a little brain fog there. Don't worry about it. It's okay. Bill, go ahead.
Well, I just talked about how it was not talked about in my family at all. And you know, there were repercussions because of that. You know, and then the other thing I wanted to say was, you know, although I said there wasn't any revelation to my parents, there weren't any, as you say, physical marks on me or anything like that, my behavior changed dramatically as soon as I was starting to be abused, which was late grade school, and all the way into high school. I struggled with paying attention to whatever was going on in the school, and I really my grades dropped dramatically, including a couple of times where I failed classes and I had to repeat them in summer school. And I was just, there was no way to explain that, you know, because I was too smart for me to do that with, you know, certain subjects anyway. It just wasn't supposed to happen, but it did. And nobody figured it out. It was my preoccupation with what had happened to me, you know, last month or last summer or whatever it was, you know, and my fear that it was going to happen again. Now that's what was going on in my head. I couldn't pay attention. So I will say that because I kind of skipped over that before. But as far as consequences with not telling my parents, I agree. Most children will not tell. However, I do want to say that if they do tell, you can believe them. So if they do tell, don't say, you know, don't try and shut them down or query too much, because children don't lie either. But
no, they
they're
don't.
Afraid of hurting you. They're afraid of getting hurt themselves. They're afraid of being wrong, you know, and so there are lots of reasons. They don't divulge unless they're invited to. And this is where I'm saying, instead of having an interrogation go on, the parent can invite the child to talk about, you know, whatever's, you know, kind of been on their mind over the weekend, if it happened, you know, like that. And
well,
they may
so
be
we
able
know
to talk a little bit.
Well, we know that the we've been given over the years, okay, and I have to say years because it's almost 12 years now, for me anyway, they've stayed to those numbers very, very closely, okay, that such a tiny, tiny, minute percent of kids are lying, okay, when they say something.
Oh,
and many times, and those times, yeah. And it's because they were told by someone, maybe there's a divorce going on or whatever, and they're trying to turn one kid against a parent and things like that. But it's so tiny because kids don't lie about stuff like that. It bothers them. They're torn apart by it. They don't know exactly what it is. They just know that they don't feel good. It hurts them. It's not something that they want to not tell. And this goes back to the very beginning, Bill, because if we as parents sit our children down, if we do that and we discuss with them the good, the bad, and the ugly, all right, and so forth, then your children will come to you. They'll feel comfortable coming to you. They'll have a much more chance of feeling comfortable because you've built that bond of trust already, okay? So that's very important. So let's see, number eight. I have a black screen here. I have a way of closing my eyes. I got to cut that out. Okay. We never leave our child alone with adults. Actually, children can be sexually abused by other children. How many times do we speak about this? We're speaking about it more, and it's good. The same lesson that can help prevent children from being sexually abused by adults can keep them safe from other children. Teach children what touch is appropriate and what is inappropriate. Teach them the proper terminology for their private parts. And teach them who they can talk to if anyone touches them in any way that makes them feel uncomfortable. Now, to me, the really important part of that up there, because we've already discussed the other, is that actually children can be sexually abused by other children. Now, we're not talking about playing doctor like you and I were talking about before, okay? Kids do that stuff. And when parents, you know, discover that, they should speak, and you know, the two parents, it might be the little girl down the street, like you said, and you, okay, the two parents get together and say, hey, blah, 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 and you talk to your children, and you say to them quietly, well, that's not what we do now, blah, 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 and you handle it the proper way. But what's not appropriate is when, you know, some kid who's 4 or 5 years older than you has a preference for a child your age, and may even you know, take advantage when they can and become sexually abusive towards, you know, say you or me or any, you know, any kid who is 4 or 5 years older. Okay, they're babying 4 or 5 years older, and they want the younger child. Now, a lot of times, what keeps them from, you know, doing it in the teenage years is because they don't want their peers to find out. They have to act a certain way amongst their peers. You know, you have the school dances, right? You have, you know, the after things that you do after school, whether it be sports with the, you know, the kids your own age, whatever. You have your parties, all right? So no one would want to be found out that really you're thinking about the kid down the block who's 5 years younger than you. Okay, and studies do show that pedophiles can be from 13 to 15 years old and up. Okay, we have come to the end of the show. We never got any further. But you see, this is a very good article to use because, you know, we have a lot of good talk about it, and hopefully those who are listening learn something, okay? It's very important. To speak to your children about child abuse, and never say it's not going to happen to my child, and never say I don't want to put thoughts in their head. Put thoughts in their head about safety. That's the thoughts you can put in their head. So we turned out to have a good show. It was a little late, wasn't it? But it's okay because we had a good talk here. So I want to thank Annie for coming on, and of course, Bill for coming on. And I'll be back tomorrow with Michelle Bless. You know, I'll be running the show tomorrow, and I'll have another topic that we'll discuss. So,
you sure it's Michelle? I don't think it's Michelle.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
I spoke. Yeah, mm-hmm. I spoke to her. So put that in.
Oh, okay. I got
Yeah, she's
okay.
coming on with
okay.
me. We'll run the show. Okay. So, anyway, good night, everybody. I just think blasting in my ear. Good night. God bless. And we'll be back tomorrow.
God bless, everybody. Thank you, guys.
Good night.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Blog Talk Radio.